Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome to Exciting Nights. I'm Tom Allen. You just met Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill. SP futures up 26. The NASDAQ futures up 80. Dow futures up 239. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine.
I'm just saying that I have this vision in my head, which of course I can't prove and have none of the resources to even attempt to prove, of 35 swinging idiots from the Chinese side with their fingers on their laptop or their cell phone trading while one of their guys gives a speech, and 15 guys in the White House this morning making a trade before Trump came out and said the trade talks are going really well and the Dow runs up 300 points. I absolutely have that vision. I have a feeling somewhere in there I know I'm right. Kevin, I think, you know, and I, my view of these people, The people who are now in charge of all these countries is getting so low, I can't even begin to, if you ever came to town one night, my buddy Robert from the Fed, we were sitting there having an adult beverage the other night, and he says, and he's one of these very metaphysical sort of dudes, and he goes, you know, it's all been since Machiavelli. I don't know if I told you this before. And he goes, The Greek for sure, Roman for quite a while, view of government was this idea that in government, nothing, you know, it's not like they didn't have bad problems with their tortures and the way they killed people and stuff, the Romans. The Greeks didn't have that many of those problems. But government was supposed to be something for, like, the people. I mean, and if you look at the early history of Rome, they had, you know, quite a few dictators, where they had a state problem. This is back when they had the two consuls, and they would just get somebody and say, okay, you can be our dictator till this war's over. And the minute the war's over, the guy goes, see ya. It's back to the front. They had no problem with the transfer of power. They had none of that stuff. And so Machiavelli came along and he said, if you want good stuff to do, go to church. You know, basically politics is, ruling is all about power. That's the thing. Now these guys, do they even have a clue? I mean, of how they're disrupting, you know, markets, how their stuff, you know, thing causes, maybe people don't care. As long as it's to the upside, I think people don't care. But, or actually probably wish they'd talk it up more, because we've gotten in that habit. But do these people even, I mean, are they just totally amoral when you get to these spots or what? I'm having a hard time getting my hands around.
They're just other occupied. So, you know, for instance, did you watch the CNN town hall, any of the CNN town hall?
There's
way more important issues. There was a lot of time spent on transgender children's rights.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a little bit more on the, you know, whether or not we should take away tax-exempt status for any church that does not support same-sex marriage.
Right.
So, you know, those are the important issues. You're dealing with the trivial. This is a big problem here.
We
can't even get presidential campaigns focused on big issues like the one you're discussing.
Very seldom I push back at my friend Kevin, but I'm going to push back a little bit here because not in what you said. But
yeah, you only do it about three times a show. Go ahead.
It's okay. It's okay. But one of the differences in opinion I have, shall we say, and this is because of not me, it's because of George Stigler. is, and he was, if you, you would love it if you'd have come to come with his classes, Kevin, because a lot of people on the right will say, you gotta run government like a business. And George Stigler would say, it's exactly run like a business, it's just a different business. And what he would say about what you just said, by the way, I agree with you 100% on which, to me, would be the bigger issue. Yet, when you look at who's gonna vote for who where, I would say, we have a gay mayor in Chicago because she got 95,000 votes in one of the most absurd elections I've ever seen. And I'm going to say 75% of those were from the LGBT community, which was way enough to swing her. And there's no politician in Chicago that ignores that community. They all vote. They're like old people, or old people used to be. So if the Democrats feel that that's their group, that's their response to Trump essentially dealing with his group. You know, people that hate Muslims, hate blacks, hate those things. Not all people are like that, Trump. Don't get me wrong, I'm saying. But his base group, or what people think it is a lot of people who feel that they've been screwed by other people in society. You know, it might be as 10% or even 5%. But the fact is, right now the Democrats feel that that's their group. So for them to spend that much time on it in a thing, to them, is way more important than worrying about somebody front-running a spoo trade like I care about. Just saying.
Yeah, I understand. And it isn't specifically front-running a spoo trade either. It is, you know, the issue you're really raising is much bigger than that.
Yeah.
It is, you know, it deals with, you know, market manipulations, and it deals with how, you know, how government goes about conducting its business and the ethical core behind it, which we know is just terrible. Well, I don't know. I know it's terrible.
Yeah,
you know, somebody else may
think differently,
and they're welcome too. But, you know, those are more substantial issues, as, you know, Lou likes to say. You know, ultimately character does matter in our leadership, and we don't, you know, we don't seem to care about that anymore. And we've been whacking away with it. We just finally got to the kind of the ultimate outcome.
Well,
I don't feel like it's going to get any better. There's a reason I have the bumper magnet on my car that says Giant Meteor 2020.
Well, Kevin,
I don't see the candidate that I can support.
I don't either. But
I don't either.
Well, but I mean, where we're going, what you just said though, let's take that apart a little bit. The cesspool has gotten so bad. I mean, I'm astounded, and maybe just because I, you know, have to watch this stuff all day long, but I'm astounded at of these topics that are off limits. Matter of fact, our friend David, we were having an interesting email fest yesterday, and he was saying that I disagree with him usually because of his, you know, the idea that if the other side can do it, so can we, type of thing. I mean, I think the guy's head is absolutely in the right place, but he's convinced that there's a split in the morality, that somehow the right's moral and the left isn't. Like, to me, they look different but the same amoral to me. We're talking about, why doesn't MSNBC talk about the seven other times we've screwed the Kurds, and they're only talking about the one time Trump's screwing the Kurds? Well, it happens to be today. That's one of the reasons why you're talking about it today. But he feels that, like, CNBC has an obligation to go through the list of the other seven people who have essentially screwed the Kurds since 1920 from the U.S. Because the list is like everybody. You know,
I do think there's some legitimate context that you can provide to that.
Yes.
And one of the questions I'd love to ask any Kurdish leader is, are you surprised?
No, I mean, but in regards to what you just said, There's no way on earth. I mean, I don't know how you could possibly, unless somehow or another, and Lou says this is totally impossible, that you would get a guy, you know, I don't even want to name a few names because they're in the news. Suppose you and I know of a guy who just, you know, has 3 degrees, writes about history, you know, is an economist, is a Renaissance man, has run a business, has been a state senator someplace or whatever, and just this fantastic guy or woman, doesn't matter what they are. And you just say, you know, here's a person, if we could somehow talk them into or drug them so they would be the third-party candidate and run, if you could find that person, they would be willing to put up with this crap and run. I don't think he ever could. I mean, that person, maybe, if you were somewhat untainted, I mean, I'm sure they'd find something where the guy did something someplace, or the lady, but the fact being is, we're talking about somebody who's way above mentally any of the people that are running, has some kind of experience, maybe he doesn't have the senator or whatever experience. I mean, that person could say, Elizabeth Warren, what are you doing with a check from, you know, from Merck in your pocket if you're saying you're going to bring down the drug companies? But no Republican's ever going to do that because they got a check for Pfizer in their pocket. So it's amazing to me the places where as much as they go after each other, almost with the knives out, there's always a knife that's in the sheath that they won't bring out because they know the other side's got them on the same thing. So there's issues they don't bring up, which are the issues that are important to you and me. Who the hell are you paid for? Who are you really running for? You're never going to get that out of these people. I mean, so they won't, since they're so in bed together with this, as much as they become disparate, the more they become the same. I mean, it's almost like a philosophical question. The more you and your neighbor hate each other, the more you become alike, right? I mean, is that true?
That probably is true. I like my neighbors, though, so I'm good.
Okay, well, you're good. You know, what do they say? The two closest emotions are love and hate?
Oh yeah, and the one you don't want is indifference.
Right. You know, I don't know how you clean it when the people who get there. I think one of the most sobering shows that out of all the stuff we've talked about, all the guests we've had, and the people who've pointed out areas that are bad, most sobering shows he's going to be on today was with Carl telling us that he helped his friend run as a representative in Florida. And how the winds of co-option in government were so strong once he got to Washington, once he actually won, where, you know, he couldn't have his own cell phone, he couldn't do this, he had to listen to these people, or he didn't get a committee assignment, he didn't do this, that. I thought that, to me, Kevin, I thought if we actually put 5 or 10 people in the House, maybe we could do something, and he basically said, you can't even do that. But I want to know who the hell the 20 people are to run the place, and I wouldn't mind shooting them, to be honest with you. I mean,
yeah, with non-lethal ammunition.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. With
I don't want Secret Service knocking at your door.
No, I think the people that we're talking about aren't officially guarded by the Secret Service. I don't think they're anybody that we know of. I don't think it's Trump. I don't think it's Pelosi. I don't think it's who's a knucklehead in the Senate.
That narrows it down.
The head of the Senate. I keep forgetting the guy's name.
McConnell?
Yeah, McConnell. What's his Asian wife's name? Elena Chao. I mean, there's people behind.
Yeah, she's just his wife. She's not his Asian wife. His wife.
You can't tell me that there is not people behind these people after we've opened up the Denny Hastert situation for 10 years on the show. Somebody put him there because they had something on him. And you know what, Kevin? I think all these people are getting to these spots. Somebody must have something on them, or whatever. But I don't know who those people are. I mean, they're clearly not the voters. I don't think. And I think it's something we got to concern ourselves with. I mean, we're talking about a country that had its most beloved president ever. You know, got his head blown off, and we still know who the hell did it and don't care. You know,
Well, and that takes me back to the point we mentioned about love, hate, and indifference. And it isn't just the low voter turnouts that we have that is indicative of identifies indifference, but it's the lack of participation in just civic participation. It's the lack of people educating themselves on issues that show that we are at that indifference stage, and that's not good.
Well, I think if you go back to, I keep quoting the guy, not because I happen to have class of Nobel Prize winner, but George Stigler, he would say that people, one of the biggest things about the University of Chicago education was, one of their main themes was, in business and really in everything, Kevin, other than like, you know, axe murderers or what do you want to call these guys? Serial murderers or something. Other than people like that or serial rapists, even crooks are fairly, I'll use the term, rational. That they're, I mean, if you go down the block, the reason why people put you know, what do you call them, home security systems in their house, is not to stop burglars. It's to make the burglar go next door. Because the burglar is going to find, okay, here's a street. I don't want to go this one because there's everybody else's window opens up on it. They're going to be rational in what they do. So Stigler's point is that the reason why that you have voter apathy is because in most elections it doesn't make any difference. I mean, the reason why I rail constantly against the Electoral College is not because, you know, first of all, you can't rail against it because the people who won are always going to think it's the best thing in the world and the people who lost aren't, okay? I get that part. But any system that essentially takes people out of the decision-making process, which this does now, maybe it wasn't designed to do that, which does now, or a system in Chicago that there's really no reason for me to go down the block. There isn't any other than the fact that I still think I have this civic duty and my grandfather would turn over in his grave, the immigrant from Italy, if I didn't go do it because he was the first guy at the polls because he never got a chance to vote anywhere else. So, I mean, unless you have that old guy mentality or old woman or whatever it is, old person, that this is a right, and if you ever stop using it, you'll lose it. The fact is, there's no reason for me to go down a block, Kevin. Two-thirds of the thing are retention for judges, and they always get retained. If they don't, they fight it, and they get in anyway. And the other people are unopposed. And I might have one or two elections, maybe. So there's no reason to go down the block. So to me, the Electoral College is another reason why people don't vote. Because in over half the states, whether it's Republican or Democrat leaning, the last guy or lady has no reason to walk down the block. I mean, in Illinois, you can say my Democratic vote, when I used to be Democratic, doesn't count because they just win by more. It also means the Republican guy's vote doesn't count because they can't. So what if they lose by less? I mean, to me, that's not representative government at all. I mean, now whether we go right away to a vote countrywide, I would probably go with the Nebraska model for a while and see how that works. Or at least in your representative district, that's one electoral vote instead of the idea that 20 million people can vote in Florida. And you can't even figure out who won yet. Somebody has to get all the electoral votes, and you can't just say, this thing's a dead heat, why don't we split them? To me, that's the rational way to do it, and yet we're not doing it that way. I mean, so whenever you do that, you end up mitigating people's votes. And every time you get an old white guy, you or me, or an old white lady, or whoever it is, you don't want all those people in California voting, do you really? So what they really tell you, and if you ever call them on it, they will, of course, you know, squeal like a stuck pig, is that you really want your vote to count more than people in California. I don't have a problem with that. Just say it. I want my vote. If I'm in Wyoming, and I've got five guns and five horses, I'm a real American, those people aren't, I want my vote to count more. Just tell me that. At least we're straight. Don't give me some long story about, you know, the founding fathers and how it's better for the people of California to have their vote count. No, it isn't. You just want yours to count more.
Tom, that's partly because that's where we've gotten.
Yeah.
We're kind of working on half of the design. The primary part of the design was really built around the limited government model.
Right.
More decentralized, states having more control. So, yeah, the Electoral College, it was, you know, the whole idea of how that vote worked was less significant because each state was sending its representation to Washington, and each state's representation was choosing the president, not the individuals themselves. Okay, that's fine. You don't like that, you like that. That's up to you. But it matters so much because the federal government has become so much more the behemoth than ever imagined and ever identified in our Constitution. That it matters so much more what's going on at the federal level, and that's where everybody starts squealing and saying it's such a big part of government, it's such an incredible percentage of government now, and now my vote's not counting for that. Whereas, you know, in the original design, much more of that was happening locally. And you know what, philosophically, I don't see us going back to it, but philosophically it makes so much sense because now where money is being spent, where decisions are being made is much, much closer to the voters, and the voters have better opportunity to throw them out. We just aren't there anymore, and I don't know what to do about it because we're not going back. No, but you know, bureaucracies don't go away.
My first view, Kevin, and you get these flashes. You know, thanks for the flash, Gordon, as they used to say on the floor. I flew from Newark to San Francisco one day. You know, it's a six-hour flight. And I fly over all these states, and I can see two or three of them at the same time. And I said, you know, in this day and age, I'm not a federalist, okay? And I like the idea that states can do some stuff and people get to do things on their own. Yet, when things become so connected, and this was before internet. Well, it wasn't before internet, before I used internet. And you look at it, I'm not one of those guys, oh, God, the internet's changed the world. No, it hasn't. But the idea...
Yeah, it has.
Well, but then I'm flying over... Let's see, down there on the right side, possessing marijuana is 25 years. On the left side of the plane, it's a misdemeanor. And these guys, well, that's insane too, Kevin. I don't mind the idea of states' rights. I absolutely do not. But if we're going to do this stuff today on every level, certainly here in Illinois, I think we need a serious constitutional convention. I don't have a problem with states' rights, but I have a problem with. I've read stuff on this. We probably need 35 states, and we need them cut up a lot differently than they are now. I mean, the state of Chicago through Jackson, Michigan through Milwaukee should essentially be a state. The agricultural community of Iowa.
Do Central not tell people in Milwaukee about that.
Okay, but what I'm saying, if you were to do it right now, you would not have states the way they are. I mean, because they don't represent, to the extent that two people from Chicago get elected Senate, or two people from Danville get elected Senate, you don't represent Chicago or Danville. I mean, they're two totally separate areas, in my mind. I mean, the idea that upstate New York, you know, the wine country is on the same page as Manhattan, to me, is a little, I mean, you, I guess, I'm not, I wouldn't, I'm not saying I could draw the map, but the point is, you do things differently. I mean, Illinois wouldn't have, how many hundred municipalities do we have, for God's sake? I mean, you know, we would do things a lot differently if we did it all over again right now, even if we kept the same core values. But I don't think there would be an electoral college. I'm saying, you're talking about people not participating, and I'm saying that people that don't participate are usually rational. I shouldn't walk down the block. The idea of leaving work early and maybe not talking to a client and going home and walking down the block and then voting for that is absurd for me.
Yeah, but rationality wasn't my point. My point was that it's indifference, because we have bred indifference, which is, which my original point was, indifference is worse than hate. It's worse than love.
But I'm not indifferent. I'm just
like
saying
the ultimate insult.
They're presenting
and that's
me
where
with,
we are.
They're presenting me with a ballot that's made me indifferent.
I think, well, you know, maybe the ballot has done that, but also I also think our leadership has done a really fine job of making us indifferent, or at least making a lot of people indifferent, and by trivializing major issues, and meanwhile rallying people by giving undue importance to lesser issues.
And when we have the economic stuff that has gone down, I mean, do you honestly think if you could ever? If I could flash every one of the listeners back to 1984, 83, 82, pick a number, and walk through the trading floors and see the rules of trading, open outcry, auction market, everybody gets to participate. By the way, on the CBOE floor, separation of principal and agent, no payment for order flow, none of those things. Was it slower than it is today? Yes. Would you want to do it that way? When you have electronics on your side? No. But even people in the industry talk to me and they say, well, it's all electronic. Electronic is not a moral or an amoral situation, Kevin. It's just electronic. It can be either one. Just like open outcry could be crooked or not crooked, right? But people blend the fact that because it's faster, somehow it's innately better. So now we have four people who make more money than God, and the markets are horrible compared to what they used to be. And you can't, there's no way you could walk up to one of these guys tomorrow and suspend them for a day. The market would go down. You've lost all regulatory power against these people. You can fine them once in a while and pay your salary, but you can't change anything. Where obviously in the old days, if you suspended a guy for a month, it was his livelihood. You talk about taking notice, but it didn't affect the market. I mean, what do you do now? There's a lawsuit. There's something going on here with Commonwealth Edison or Exelon and some state senator taking bribes. Well, okay, suppose the guy took bribes and ran through the stuff. I mean, I paid $45 last month for my gas bill, and I used no gas. None. You know, but now it's a delivery charge. When these guys come out and say save electricity, they want you to save it. They don't care. They don't get that piece of it anymore. They just get the delivery charge. I mean, this stuff is so far down. Now, what if they find out that this guy was paid off by Commonwealth Edison and in the last gas bill or the last electric bill increase went out because of this guy? He chaired it. I don't know anything about the guy. Suppose he chaired a committee and did that and the other thing. Now, does that mean Exelon loses the gain? I'm going to say no, Kevin. You're never going to go back. These people are too powerful.
Well, Exelon could lose the contract. Well, no, they can't.
No, they can't. SP Futures up, still up 28. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Socks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708 708- 403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill. SP Futures down 30. NASDAQ Futures up 87 as we are absolutely focused on this this quote deal that now, as it's unfolding, the more I read about it, it's going to be a very light deal. We're going to buy some soybeans, a little bit of this. We're going to delay the tariffs. We're not going to stop them. And all of a sudden now the market is deciding, or somebody's trading as if that's good enough after all this time. And that is absolutely just not me. Manny, my computer is frozen up here. Why don't you do some traffic, weather, sports? I'll see if I can get it rolling.
I can do that. 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a great start this Friday morning in spite of rainy conditions. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Light traffic on the Eisenhower, Stevenson, Dan Ryan, I-57, Bishop Ford, Suburban Tollways, all quiet. So even off the expressways, Chief, no accidents or stalled vehicles to report. So I'll keep everyone posted if that should change. But we're looking good so far. Weather today, not so good. After we had a great week of mild weather with lots of sunshine, we get substantial cool down this afternoon and into the weekend. We'll have a high of 66, which is where we're at right now. Showers on and off throughout the day. And then this afternoon, a cold front moves in. And on your way home, it'll be in the mid-40s. And then this weekend, highs of just 50 on Saturday and Sunday. So bundle up for football if you're heading out anywhere this weekend. Again, right now it's rainy and 66, but much cooler this afternoon. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 90. Right now it's clear and 60. In sports, the Blackhawks home opener last night was a back-and-forth affair before they ended up losing to the Sharks 5-4. Blackhawks are now 0-2 on the young NHL season. Coyotes topped the Golden Knights 4-1. In baseball, the Astros advanced to the ALCS. They'll take on the Yankees after disposing of the Rays 6-1 in Game 5 last night in Houston. Everyone's been looking forward to this Astros-Yankees series. Most people think the two best teams in all of baseball. And they'll square off beginning this weekend down in Houston. The NLCS begins tonight down in St. Louis. It'll be Cardinals hosting the Nationals in Game 1. And lastly, Sunday Night Football last night, it was the Patriots pulling away in the second half over the Giants, 35-14. Chief.
The Houston Yankees, this should be interesting. When can this guy pitch? He's going to pitch last night. Sunday?
I doubt they would use him on Sunday. But they could, but for, you know, a Game 2 situation.
Oh, they're Saturday, Sunday.
I think they're Saturday, Sunday. I bet they would use him on Tuesday, Game 3 in New York. That would be my guess.
All right, so one starts tonight, right?
Cardinals-Nationals is tonight down in St. Louis.
Well, that should be fun.
Yeah. Both good championship series. I don't know if I can watch the National League side because I'm just not ready to do that.
Why? Because of your Cubs?
Yes, but because I think the Cubs are better than the Nationals and the Cardinals.
Why? Only a homer would say that.
Well, I just think they're better. I mean, they didn't play better. They didn't deserve to be there, but I just think they're more talented. They just didn't play better.
They don't have Fahey. They don't have Strasburg. They don't have the other guy.
Frank Fahey?
No, not Frank. What's the guy? Flaherty?
Flaherty, yeah.
Flaherty, Fahey, what's the difference?
No, they don't. That's true.
We'll give them Frank Fahey.
Yeah. The Cubs don't have the ace pitcher that they had with Jake Arrieta back in 15 and 16. There's no doubt about that.
Who's the number two?
I mean, you could argue they have a whole starting rotation of twos and threes.
I don't think Lester's even that anymore.
I mean, Lester in the second half certainly faded, as most 35, 36-year-old guys do. Unless you're Justin Verlander and you're on that Kate Upton juice or some other juice that we're not aware of yet. But yeah, Lester's not the same as he was. But Hendricks is still very good. Quintana is still very solid. Hamels was
Quintana
good for the most part,
pitch.
But he was hurt.
Quintana needs another pitch. Needs a pitching coach he'll listen to. I think he needs another pitch. That's just me.
Well, he's not going to come up with another pitch now, I don't think.
Why?
At age 30 or
some guys do.
He might. I mean, it's possible.
But Yu Darvish does.
Yeah, and then Darvish was spectacular in the second half and was probably, you know, the closest thing they had to an ace. Didn't get any run support. Certainly still gave up too many home runs, and hopefully he can get that corrected next year. But, yeah, no, the Cubs would love to be in the Garrett Cole sweepstakes. Maybe they will be. Probably not. But, you know, there's not many number one aces out there. But the Nationals seem to have two of them. The Astros have two of them. And they've been very good because of that.
Well, the Cubs have decided to not grow pitchers. Maybe that'll change. Some of these guys they brought up for the minors, I think that's got some potential.
You would think you would accidentally fall into a couple of good starting pitchers after 6 or 7 years, and they just haven't.
No.
Yeah, if the Cubs do make a kind of a team reshaping deal with one of their well-known players, one of the things that they undoubtedly will get back is prospect pitchers. You know, a Kyle Hendricks type of acquisition where, you know, or maybe better prospect than that, who they get in lower minor league levels, but will be on their team in a couple of years.
I would agree.
I see him with probably four or five rocks on the team. I don't see how you get rid of any one of those people. It's not like they've got nine of them. I mean, 3 years ago they had four outfielders or five outfielders that they were fighting for time. Now they don't. Where's the extra people?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, will they re-sign Castellanos? That's up in the air. Almora absolutely has not panned out. Hayward absolutely has not panned out. I think Schwarber was one of the best players in all of baseball in the second half last year.
You watch him in September, he's a keeper.
Yeah, I mean, if he can, whatever changes he made at the All-Star break, if he can carry that into next year, then he's a force to be reckoned with. We know what Rizzo is. Bryant is in the final year of a contract, and they don't think they're going to, I mean, I don't know this, but what I'm hearing is they don't think they're going to be able to sign him. So he would be a guy, even though I love Chris Bryant, that you would consider trading because, to Kevin's point, you know, you need young pitching prospects, and you could get a lot for a guy like that, even for, you know, 1 year on a contract. Whereas the Nationals did not do that with Harper, and then they lost him for basically nothing. So, you know, there's decisions to be made. Contreras is another guy that, you know, has a lot of value that faded in the second half and has the last couple of years because of injuries and other, you know, for whatever reason. And then Baez is great. But you'd like him to take more walks and he got hurt. I mean, they had a lot of injuries in September. They were in first place at the beginning of September. Then the whole team got hurt and they just fell apart.
Well, the saga of Chris Bryant to me is, I'm no doctor, but my friends tell me. My friends, my sources, Kevin, that...
I don't know about you. You may have sources. I have people.
People source. Actually, you have people. I got guys.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I'll put my guys up against your people any day. Just saying, you know. But anyway, Kevin, what I'm hearing is that some huge number, 70, 80% of all quarterbacks in the NFL over the age of 30... got stem cell therapy in her shoulders in the offseason, and that's one of the reasons why they can still throw like they can. Somehow, some way, either Chris Bryant has to figure out how to fix that knee, which I still think is bugging him a little bit. But right now, my concern with him is I love the guy, but the aura of Chris Bryant, the really good-looking, tall, you know, whatever, gonna do underwear ads when he retires, like, what's his name, Jim Palmer. I mean, the aura of the guy is way better than the way he plays right now. And if somebody's willing to pay him for the aura, you gotta let him go. Because right now, he's not worth that. I mean, he's playing as a 6.5, 7, and he wants to get paid as a 10. He's not a 10 now. Now, if he can fix the knee up and he has a 10-year, then go ahead, pay him. You know, but...
Yeah, I think he's better than a 6.5, Tom. He may not be a 10. And if he has any value, you know, as a trade value, and I'm not necessarily advocating trading him. I think he's a terrific ball player, and, you know, really one of not just a good hitter. He's become a good defensive player, and he is, you know, an outstanding base runner, which should never be discounted.
I agree.
But if a team were going to make a deal for Chris Bryant on a 1 year contract, it would have to be a team that thinks it needs one player to get over the hump.
Right.
You know, maybe that's, I don't know who plays. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Who plays third at Minnesota? for example, could they use a guy like him?
I'm going to say that virtually every team.
Right now, they're in their window, and they think they can win. So, you know, that's, you know, maybe it's San Diego, although San Diego doesn't need any left side of the infield guys, so he'd have to go there as an outfielder. But maybe, you know, maybe it's a team like that that has a lot, but not quite enough.
Oh, I don't disagree. My point is that I look at guys, I mean, you know, when you and I were growing up, the thing that hurt me the most ever was the year the Cubs had Andre Dawson going on one leg, and he had that horrible series against the Giants. Because Andre Dawson was a way better player than that, and they were just, he was all they had, and he was wounded, and they had him out there anyway. And look what happened to him and the Cubs. And, you know, the visions of that guy striking out on one leg when he was one of the best ball players I ever saw. He's a guy that shouldn't have been there.
It is interesting looking at Chris Bryant's WAR. Based on wins above replacement, he was less than half as good this year as he was the year he won the MVP.
That's what I'm saying.
His rookie year, he had a 6.1 WAR and won Rookie of the Year. His second year, he won the MVP and they won the World Series. He had a 7.4 WAR. He was the best player pretty much in all of baseball besides Mike Trout, certainly the best in the National League. And then 2017, he went back to his rookie year where he had the same exact WAR, 6.1. And then 2018, he was hurt. He missed 60 games in 2018. He only played 102 games. His WAR went all the way down to 1.9. This year, it went way back up compared to 2018, but it only got up to 3.6. Again, and he missed 15 games this year. So obviously missing games factors into that.
He got whacked the head a couple times. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but he, you know, was he still very good? Yes, 3.6 WAR, you'll take that. If every player did that, you'd be the Astros or the Yankees.
Yep.
But you know, not nearly as good as he was in 15, 16, or 17.
But I don't know of anybody other than Andre Dawson of the classic players that I knew when I was growing up, when he was visibly hurt. Other than Andre Dawson, I've never seen people who consider themselves superstars that are MVP material that disappear for an entire month of September, and last year disappeared in the playoffs. I mean, the list goes on of guys that ended up in the Hall of Fame. And by the way, I had that.
Barry Bonds did it regularly when he was in Pittsburgh.
Well,
yeah, he did.
Well, okay.
Then in San Francisco, he figured it out. There's a lot of guys that for whatever reason sucked in the playoffs. I mean, Kershaw.
Yeah.
You know, as recently as two nights ago, he for whatever reason he just hasn't been the same guy in the playoffs.
Well, you're playing a, I'm saying is you're playing a better class of people.
Correct, and there's a lot of pressure.
But I mean, there's batters that if you see some kind of hole in their swing during the year that fatten up on the relief pitchers and the games you're up 6-1, those guys are going to have trouble in the playoffs, and they usually do.
I always thought Derek Lee did that, even though I love Derek Lee.
I did too.
I watch every game, and Derek Lee, it would be, you know, in that 2-1 game, you know, he would be 0-for-5 or 1-for-5 with 3 strikeouts, and then in that game where the Cubs would win 12-2, you know, that was the game, like, you know, when the game was already 10-2,
right.
Then he would hit, you know, 2 solo home runs in the 7th and 9th inning or something.
Well,
to
that's,
pile on.
And that's
not the, always, but you know, it just seemed that way.
Well, that's why I was absolutely, I couldn't believe how impressive Castellanos and Schwarber were in September. They were like Jim Hickman in 69. They were trying to hold together by themselves, pretty much. I mean, Baez was hurt, but Baez had a couple games where he struck out one game 5 times. Name me a Hall of Famer that ever struck out one day 5 times. You know, I mean, I think these guys, they need to step it up a little, the Cubs. And internally, I think they can do it. I agree with you that, Matty. If there's any chance that Bryant still has a knee problem, Get them to the stem cell guys, for God's sake, or do something. I mean,
I think they're going to, like Kevin said earlier, I think they're going to make a lot of changes. And I wouldn't be surprised if one or more of the core guys are moved as part of that because they're valuable pieces.
Well,
I think Nico Hoerner is going to be a superstar, and I think he's a guy you can plug right into second base. And he's a contact hitter, speed guy. I think he's would be a perfect leadoff guy once he gets comfortable and gets used to big league pitching. He's a great defensive player. Can play shortstop as we saw did for the last 2 months.
Oh, I keep forgetting Rizzo. Rizzo had a one man gang September too.
Rizzo is just awesome all year.
Yeah.
He was great.
All right, so Bryant possibly because of the contract. You can't move Rizzo. You can't move Schwarber. Who are you going to replace him with? Who else you got left? If you don't sign Castellanos,
they need a real center fielder.
Yeah,
I mean you can't. You're Hayward has no value offensively, even though this year he was a little bit better than he's been the last few years, but he's still not near worth his contract. And then when you put him in center field, he actually has no value defensively either.
He's just okay.
He's just okay. But you put him in right field, he's very, very good defensively in right field. And so they really weakened their entire team by bringing in Castellanos, even though he was so good offensively. They moved Hayward to center, and you lost everything defensively because Castellanos is just average defensively. Hayward becomes average defensively, and Schwarber is average defensively. So now your outfield defense stinks,
yeah,
and you're not getting any offensive production out of your center fielder.
Well, I felt bad for Almora on that one play. That was a really tough catch.
He sucks.
But the performance he put on in the Cardinal game in St. Louis where he got the two balls out of the that should have been home runs. I mean,
yeah,
that's the guy I thought they were getting.
Yeah, he just didn't. He was not that guy this year consistently for some reason.
Well, and his offense is just bad.
Well, it's not. It's not a center fielder's offense.
It's not an everyday player's offense.
But it would be okay if he could walk and could steal bases if he was just fast.
Yeah,
but he can't even do that.
He can't walk. He doesn't. He's not fast. He doesn't hit for power. He doesn't hit for average. And his defense was just okay this year.
All right, so you keep telling me all these people are going to trade. They got like four people anybody cares about.
No, I think you know they're going to have to. I think, like I said, Chris Bryant is going to be there. I think Contreras could be a guy that you consider trading. And
right, there's two.
And I think those guys will bring a lot back. And then the free agency, you know, there's some money off the books too. Cole Hamels' big contract is off the books. Morrow's big contract will be off the books. And so I think they're going to spend some money too on pitching. And they're going to try to get a real leadoff hitter, or they're going to maybe play Horner at leadoff. I don't know.
That would make. What about what's this? This goofball that takes 40 seconds to pitch with the bird stance. How long are they hooked up with him?
I think it was a 3-year deal. So
two more years.
Oh my God! Good Lord!
And he may be better. You know, it can't be worse. It was bad circumstance. He spent a lot of time injured. Maybe he's just damaged goods, and he's never going to be good. But over the last, 8 to 10 years, he's been one of the best relievers in baseball. So unless he's completely lost it, he really just needs an off-season getting in, you know, back in shape after sitting so long and getting and going on the injured list several times, and then, you know, come back, do the spring training regimen, get yourself ready for the season.
Well, there are people that, and I don't know if it's mental or what it is, but it sure seems to me like it must be, because I was never the most talented guy, so I always had to find ways to do things, the small stuff to make up for it. I remember Goose Gossage. I don't know, he's not a Hall of Famer, but he was one of the best relievers of his time. He was on the White Sox, and then he went to the Yankees, and then he came back to the Cubs. But so the guy lost a couple of feet on his fastball, right? So he was a 98 mile an hour guy before there were 98 mile an hour guys, and at least that people. But he didn't want to be bad when he came in, right, Kevin? Because he was slightly wild and ways. All of a sudden, the guy's
yeah, he'd hit the ball every once in
yeah.
a while.
Every once in a while, and he comes to the Cubs. He got hammered, and the guy he lost it from 98 down to like 94. But the guy had been in the game forever. He's supposed to be one of the nicest guys. Somehow or another, he couldn't figure out that there's people that are pitching 92 that get people out all the time. And yet he would pitch the exact same way as he did when he was 98, and now he's 93, and guys are hammering him. I mean, no attempt to develop a sinker, no attempt to throw any kind of a cutter, no attempt to do anything. I'm going to do it the same way I always did, except for it's like going to run a sprint race, you know, when you're 40 instead of 21. Well, wait a minute. You probably shouldn't be running sprints anymore. Maybe you should try half marathons or something. I mean, it's not like you can't play. It's not like you can't be effective. You just can't be effective in the same way. And so this guy that they got from Kansas City, Mr. Beardo Birdstance, to me, he's out there.
He didn't come from Kansas City.
Or where he came from? I thought he came from the Royals.
He was in Boston.
He was in Boston.
Oh, all right, whatever.
And he won the World Series with the Red Sox.
Well, all of a sudden now, the guy takes 40 seconds between pitches trying to rev it back up to 98, and he's not, and when he throws it right down the middle, the guy's hammering. I mean, there's got, for him to come back and be effective, he has to come back with a knowledge different skill set than he showed this year. He's not just going to come back at 100 miles an hour and do the same thing he did 8 years ago. I don't think. You understand what I'm saying, Kevin? I mean, you just got to be different. When Rick Rusher hurt his shoulder and came back.
Yeah, but I don't think he's ever been just a, a fastball pitcher. He's, you know, he has a slider. He has, you know, he has other things. Look, Tom, I think the biggest problem was he sat out until, what, end of May?
Yeah.
Then he was eligible to sign without compensation, so he signed a contract. He hurried back, probably got in the lineup too soon, spent, what, three stints on the injured list, and then, I don't know how you judge that season as saying, well, you know, he hasn't learned how to adapt
right.
his pitching. He hasn't learned how to adapt his arm, you know, to not being in shape.
Well, plus Joe Maddon, the first night back, will put him in a super pressure situation instead of trying him out.
I never understood that either.
Yeah.
Like he did that with Strope a few times
yeah,
this season,
he did too.
And Strope would just give it up. It's like you guys haven't pitched in 3 weeks, and you put him in a 1-1 game in the eighth with two on. Like for God's sake,
do you think he might have buried Carl Edwards the same way? The guy, he'd be in AAA, and put him back, and the first time he walks out there, he's in this super, bottom of the ninth with two outs and two guys
yeah.
on base.
I sort of understand the philosophy of, like, hey, I'm going to build confidence by showing you I believe in you, and I'm going to put you in big situations, even though, you know, you've been on the injury list. I sort of get that, and if it works, then the guy's, like, fired up, and he's ready to go, and he's back. But if it doesn't work, it's like, man, you really had an opportunity to maybe put that guy in a 5-1 game and let him, you know, pitch in a little bit lower pressure situation, and now you basically waste. I mean, they just Carl Edwards is just a shell of himself this season.
Manny, I don't. There's a camera.
You know, if you ever listened to Joe Maddon talk about Carl Edwards, just as a guy, not as a pitcher, he always talked about what an interesting young man he was, and you know, highly intelligent and thoughtful, and all of those kinds of things, and he really enjoyed him a lot. And you know, maybe he's just one of those guys that overthinks everything.
That could very well be.
But I mean, there's a certain logic to this, man. I mean, again, I was never a great athlete. I love to play, but if I was on, say, your basketball team, if I was younger, because you guys got some good ball players, now, all of a sudden, if I had, you know, something wrong with me and I couldn't play for 3-4 weeks, and you call me up and say, hey, can you go next Friday? Yeah, the doctor gave me the okay. I tell you what, I'm going to go find a Park District League someplace for the next two nights, even if I got to go shoot around or go play with a bunch of schlumps, to figure out, am I really back or aren't I, before Maddie puts me in this game where they actually need me and I suck. I mean that's common sense. It's not a question of let's see if he's really okay and put him in the last minute of the playoff game. You don't do that to somebody.
Yeah. I agree. It was very perplexing with some of the moves that, and I love Joe Maddon and will always love Joe Maddon, but over the course of his tenure, even in the World Series, I mean, there were so many decisions that were made, especially with the pitching staff, that at the time, some of them worked out, some of them didn't. But at the time, it's like, what are you doing?
Like, yeah, and look, tactics were always questionable with Joe Maddon. What his real strength as a manager was always keeping his team focused for the whole season, that you had a team full of guys that would bust it on every ground ball, that just worked really hard. They had such a great attitude. When I saw that start to erode this season, and there were several instances of it, that's when I knew he was done.
Well, do you think how
because,
much Kevin
you
is
know,
a,
if his strength is not what they're doing, that's a problem.
If as a guy who teaches management, knows management, has a lot of common sense about managing people, do you think it's possible to keep what he was good at? Was that possible to keep that when you refused to renew him?
Top management could have undermined him with the team. That's possible. But I don't think he was ever a guy who motivated with fear. So if the undercut a guy who motivates with fear and people stop fearing him. I don't think people ever feared Joe Maddon. I think Joe Maddon got people to do because, you know, for the asking, basically. He got them to do things for the asking and learn to tap into each individual and say what's gonna motivate that particular guy. Hey, we are almost out of time.
Yeah.
I know you gotta get to Carl. I gotta get to a meeting, and I only prepared five other things to discuss today. But there is one thing I do have to mention, and that is that my first memory of Notre Dame football goes way back to 1964. I was just a little kid, got 10 years old, 9 years old, and And I remember when Errol Parseghian took his first Notre Dame team out to Southern California undefeated, and they lost 21-17. And I remember my mother sobbing after that game. And I have never forgiven those evil bastards for making my mother cry.
Are we talking 1964 or 5?
4.
Okay. Yeah, with the I remember the game when we were freshmen, and it was pouring rain out there, which you don't normally get in California, and they turned the ball over 3 times, even though Joe Theismann, what, threw for 500 yards and they lost?
Oh, yeah, over 500, yep.
Joe, that was a special night for a
quarterback. So what you're saying is it's a big game this weekend, no matter what the records say.
This is the battle, to crush evil.
What goes back? To
Irish are big favorites, right?
What goes back?
They should be. I don't know what weather is. Weather's going to suck, so that might be a bit of an equalizer.
Yeah, it's going to be 50
especially when Brian Kelly doesn't have the discipline not to pass in a tight game, when he's got a good running game.
Well, what was the guy? What was the coach that went on to Tampa for 10 years? Nobody at Southern Cal made it through the admissions department.
Oh, John McKay.
John McKay, he won 8 out of 10 years against the Irish, and then he ended up, talk about the spanking, with the 2 years not on TV at all, and no, how many recruits they had. He left that school and decimated.
Notre Dame are 11-point favorites.
I think that's a little rich. My man Beldo.
USC sucks.
The freshman quarterback, according to Beldo, is best in the country. And he didn't play last week.
Could be.
But he's supposedly healthy for Saturday. So, Kevin, all right, take care of yourself, buddy.
All right.
SP Futures up 29.50. NASDAQ Futures up 86. We're focused on the China trade deal, which Trump says the deal's going good, so he ran the S&Ps, the Dow up 300 points this morning. This has got to stop. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of Dax Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jacks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen Dax Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering 3 research newsletters. The Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than 3 decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of Dax Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your bank's, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Lord, don't pay Stocks and Jocks. Sometime I'm just about Weber on the board. Mr. Carl Denninger, SP Futures is up 29.25. NASDAQ Futures 85.50. This is despite, well, the president came out and said we very close to, quote, the deal is going very well. So the expectation is for a very minor deal. And I guess the market's celebrating just getting it out of the news because we're not talking at all about the tariffs in Europe. And this morning we have oil up 77 cents. It's up 2%, well, was up 2% as Iran claims a missile whacked into one of their tankers in the Red Sea. I don't think it sunk the thing, but we've got gold down $16 down to 1484. So gold's getting whacked because the Chinese have been a buyer of gold. I guess people are thinking they're not going to have to buy it anymore. I think that's a stretch. This enthusiasm is a little bit too much for me. Carl, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's kind of amusing to watch the algorithmic and crazy back and forth stuff that's essentially all driven by tweet.
Well,
that's right.
And you know, it's, you have to remember that Trump is a self-promoter, you know, given where he comes from, and that you know, he's a showman as well. I mean, he's the apprentice and whatever. So you know, he's kind of like the old fight promoters, right, that are out there, you know, they build it. This is going to be the biggest fight ever. That's going to be the biggest boxing match ever in the history of the world. And the market just kind of gets yanked around by the nose on this stuff. And at the same time, there's real lack of progress, if you will, which would be putting it nicely in terms of actually getting anything done when it comes to the issues that underlie this trade problem. And that's because there really isn't a whole lot that you can do that keeps the way that this pyramid has been built intact.
Well, Carl, what is, if you had a guess, I mean, I deal with the markets all day, but I'm pretty focused on people's equity portfolios and options and how to hedge them and protect people who want to be protected and those kinds of things and trying to find less risky ways to do the same thing. But I have a sense of the overall market because I was around when there were an awful lot of people making markets and there were very deep books on the New York Stock Exchange, but there only was one exchange, and there were a lot of what you call standing orders. Now, I got to believe people being rational, you're not going to find a standing order in a spook pit of any real, unless somebody has some long premium and is just hoping that we're down 20 or 30 and puts in a couple down in there because he's got some puts and he's willing to buy them down there because he's covered already. I mean, I can't imagine somebody naked just being, you know, oh, we're trading 29.70, I'll just be a buyer of 10 at 29.50. I mean, that guy can't be around anymore. I can't believe. So when the I used the vision earlier, and I'm saying this is true, of one Chinese guy making a news conference about the thing, and the other 35 guys in the group, you know, trading ahead of it on their laptop while he's talking, and the same thing coming out of the White House. I mean, I don't know who the hell where those standing orders are. I mean, they're picking a few people off, but I can't imagine this is liquid at the hours they're doing this. That's how Trump gets 300 points out of this. He does it in the middle of the night. I mean, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's one of the things that happens. And then the other thing that occurs is that you get all the computer traders that are in there with relatively small ball positions, but they go against them and they pile out on the other side.
Right.
And so, you know, you think you know which way the market is going. It's, you know, it's the spoos are down, you know, 25 handles, you know, in the middle of the day. And all of a sudden you get a tweet and, you know, God and everybody was piling in short on the way down. And uh-oh.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's, and you know, that's where you get those kinds of rocket ship type moves. And it's, and the retail guy that's out there actually trying to trade, he gets run over by this stuff because no matter what he does, he's slower.
Well, right. You get run over unless you're set up in advance, which is really,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not a shameless plug, but that's what our protected index program, Carl, allows us to do. But I will say it was never designed that way. That's not what you buy protection. Okay. And that's supposed to last you for a year and a half. Well, now it doesn't. If you bought XYZ at 100 and you bought the 100 puts, okay, now your risk now becomes whatever you paid for the put because you can sell it to somebody at 100, right? Well,
right.
So that's supposed to last a year and a half by my design. Now what happens if the thing's trading 90 tomorrow? Well, you're gonna buy the 90 puts and sell the 100 puts. So you're down 10 on the stock, but you might be up 7.5 on the put. Now you're still down money a little bit, but now if it runs back
right.
to 100,
well, yeah, and then not only that, you had to pay for the second set of premium too.
Well, right, but now if it runs back to 100, instead of being even, you're up $5 or $6. So you actually
right.
want this to happen, you know, as many times as you can. You'd love it to trade 90, trade 100 on the same day. you just made $5 out of nothing, right? Really, but I mean that's not how the system was designed. I'm saying, and unless you are covered, you can't get longer lower. But when you already have the put, you can get longer. Or if, you know, on a way up, you know, type of thing. You can do the same thing. You can buy a higher put and sell the lower put. But unless you're set up in advance, you're not a natural buyer lower and a seller higher. Because what happens
right.
when it goes down, I mean, if you sell something and all of a sudden it comes running up, guess what? You're a buyer above, like you just said. You're chasing.
Right, you're chasing and you're already in the hole.
Yeah. It's an
yeah.
But because, I mean, people in, when I first started, Carl, it was in a serious bear market, obviously. And one of the most amazing phrases from the floor would be, now this is not for retail people because they're always long, pretty much. But if you're in the business and you're just trying to maintain and make markets and not be one way or the other, they would say nothing is as brutal as a bear market rally. In terms of coming out of the blue and just sticking it where the sun don't shine, because everybody's short, they're leaning all over the thing, and all of a sudden everybody's chasing.
Right.
It's way more. I mean, if you're short, you'd much rather be short in a bull market than you are in a bear, than you would be in a bear market rally. Not even close.
Yeah. It's the thing. It's just more violent.
Yeah. And people say that's the end of the bear market, and you go, no, it's not. It's just a bear market rally. So I don't know what this is. I mean, but I'll tell you what this has done. This has made us forget all the air tariffs in Germany. It's made us forget the Brexit. It's made us forget whatever the hell the Fed did 2 weeks ago, which nobody can seem to figure out, which is what I'm going to ask you. All this stuff is now forgotten, which I don't know that it's forgotten. Maybe it's just delayed a day or two, but I don't know what happens when people remember it again. Maybe nothing, you know. It's crazy stuff.
Yeah, and what you have, generally speaking, here is a market that for the last 10 years has been running on this negative real interest rate problem that we've generated. And, you know, Obama and the Fed essentially were the genesis of that. And it's continued. And now, you know, you're yelling that left us with this, and then Powell comes in, and now it's like, okay, now what? And the answer is that when you have a federal government that is running a 25% cash deficit, which is approximately what it's running, and that ends up being 4 or 5% of GDP. If you have rates anywhere in the curve that are less than that, you have negative real rates in terms of credit emission. I mean, that's just the math on this. Okay, so people are being paid to borrow, and that drives up asset prices. And the idea that you can keep doing it forever and ever and ever and ever and ever is lunacy, because as you pile up that pile of debt, it has interest servicing costs. Well, what happens if rates ever go up?
Well, you wanted to. I think there was a time, Carl, when that statement you just made perfect sense. Okay, now it makes pretty close to perfect sense. But right now, I think there are. I honestly believe I'm getting this man behind the curtain mentality, which probably is wrong, but maybe not totally wrong. I think it's reached the point where you're going to keep the asset prices up till the point where 30 people get out, and then they don't care, and then they'll, because eventually that's not going to work. I mean, I think there's certain people who knows who are going to know when the Fed turns the other way. I mean, there was a chart. Financial Times, which of course I'm trying to find this morning, I can't find because I saved it just for you. I don't know if you saw it, but I haven't seen this one. In 2008, if you put all the GDPs of the world together that have been worth anything, you know, Sweden, UK, Europe, China, if you put all Japan from all in one spot, at that time the GDPs of the world pretty much equaled currency in circulation and pretty much equaled Fed balance sheets if you added them all together. All central bank balance sheets. It was like 100. It was on a scale of 100, okay? I don't know what the number was. It might have been 100 trillion. It could have been. But now the GDPs are like 1.24 times that. So we're up like 24% in 10 years, which is about right, right? I mean, so everybody's averaging like 2% a year, even though they're cheating on it because the inflation numbers are higher than that. Currency in circulation has gone up like three times that. It's like 1.9. And central banks' balance sheet are like 4.6. So they've gone up like four times compared to 2008.
Which means that the real growth rate is negative.
Well, or whatever it is, the more they throw at it, the less. Let's just be plebeian about it and say it's reached the point where it takes more and more to get less and less return.
Well, actually, this is something that I wrote about more than 10 years ago, which is that at some point, and this is true any time that you start piling debt upon debt upon debt, at some point you get less than a dollar worth of output for a dollar worth of new debt, and you say, that's impossible because it's a dollar, except that a dollar is not an invariant unit. And so, if you start measuring in invariant units, some SI unit, BTUs of energy, okay, kilograms of produced mass of goods, then what you find is that as you continue to add to this, you actually get a negative contribution margin from it. And we're well into that realm at this point. Not just here, but in Europe as well, which is why you have the negative interest rates over there, and yet, where's the exit from this?
Well, why would you like to be Christine Lagarde? You know what this reminds me of? Talk about mental human beings, that they do things, in different areas to give the same spot. You know what you just described is essentially a beer party. The first case with eight guys sitting there is spectacular. Second case, maybe not as spectacular. The 30th case, what are you even doing? Get out of here with that.
Right. And the thing is what really... What really galls you, if you think about it for a few minutes, is that Japan tried this after after their market blew up, and the Nikkei originally was at 40,000, right?
38, I would guess.
Their market,
40.
Went kaboom.
Yep.
And they've never gotten out of it.
Well, I'm going to ask you this question because I know you might actually know the answer, because I have always concerned myself. Big difference between Japan and Europe and us. Thank God we have. Well, who knows if the Fed's going down this road? I don't know. I hope they haven't. But one of the things that struck me when Dr. Jay and I were off in Europe giving lectures in 1991 is we never made the mistake here from the Fed, although we did what Fannie and Freddie preferred. We never made the mistake of allowing corporate stock to be good capital for a bank.
Right.
Yet Europe did that. I mean, in the 91, I'm like, wait a minute, you guys own stock in these companies? Well, yeah, we own like the 10 biggest banks in Europe own like 80% of all the stock in all the biggest companies, which is so totally un-American. I couldn't believe it.
But you got the same thing going. I mean, you know, you look at what's going on over in Japan.
What's I'm saying, Japan's
the
same way.
Japanese central bank owns, you know, some huge percentage of all the ETF assets in the country.
But what I'm saying is that when the banks all went under over there, or weren't allowed to, quote, go under, they became zombie banks, right? They essentially had stock in all these companies that went from. I would have guessed the top on the Nikkei was 38, but if you say 40, I'm going to go with 40. And it went down to, what, 10 or 8? So that's a big drop. So these guys are left with all this stock, and they are technically all bankrupt, okay? But on a cash basis, the depositors and the people who have loans that are still paying it, on a day-to-day basis, the actual bank is, quote, fine, right? I mean, in terms of cash. They just paid a whole bunch of money for something that's now worth a lot less. So, I mean, which you and I know is a very bad thing, and if they were actually marked to market like you and I would be, they'd be broke. But there's no impetus to say sell that stock at 40 that you bought at 100 because A, there's nobody to sell it to, and B, we'll just hang here, we won't, quote, take the loss. And we hope over the next 20 years of being a zombie that we'll make enough money in our, quote, real business to feed the other side. Some profits to come back a little bit and hope maybe the stock market will actually come up a little bit and in 20 years we'll be okay, which sort of what they did, right? Or am I making this too simple?
Well, that's the idea. The problem with that as a premise and a principle is that the assumption you're making is that the institution can actually return a real profit and isn't just piling into more of the same junk.
Well, right, but I mean,
and so how do they actually make money though if their business is lending capital to people who can't pay it back?
Well, I'll give you, but I'm saying if you, for instance, you know, if you come over to PTI, we don't really do much of this business, but I mean, we would, I suppose. If somebody came in and said, "I want to buy 1,000 shares of IBM," and it's trading, I'll look at the actual number, it's trading 142. All right, so 1,000 shares, you have to send us $71,000. Okay, you don't have to send us the whole 142. That's Reg T. It's a Fed ratio. It's not a brokerage firm. Can't mess with it. Well, if the stock goes down to 20 tomorrow, well, guess what? You're down. Even with the half you sent us, you're down. You're down what? You're down still $50,000, right?
Yeah.
So now what we could do is we could say, you know, send us now for a retail customer or for a smaller trader on the floor. We're gonna say send us the $50,000 or we're puking you out basically because you're debit. All right. And, so if you say I don't have the $50,000 and we puke you out or RBC pukes you out, we're gonna say, hey, Carl, you owe us $50,000. Well, you're gonna say, well, I don't have $50,000. All right. So somebody's out the 50. Okay. But if you're big enough, I mean, there were a couple guys on the floor that were big enough where they said, look, let's just take the negative piece and put it into account over here. Do you have any money at home? Yeah, well, I got another $100,000. We'll bring that $100,000 in, and you can now trade on the new $100,000, and we'll just put the other stuff into a zombie account and hope it comes back. And one of the most interesting stories to that, and I won't say the guy's name other than he used to fly in air balloons and things like that, he had a boatload of stock or bonds in Chicago Northwestern. Now, back in the crash of 89, if it was part of, they had a big, I don't know, some kind of a collapse of the, these things were trading for like $1. There was literally nobody to sell them to. So the clearing firm said, I was part of this committee, we came up with a deal and said, let's put all that stuff in kind of a zombie account. If there's any more money, let's start over again over here because we got all these people that are employed by the guy and all this other kind of stuff. So we did that. Now, you and I, Carl, I mean, they would have made us find some bleep who'll give us one penny on the dollar and make us essentially take this many million dollar loss. I mean, now we've already lost it, okay, because it's down, right? But the fact is, there's no point in consummating it at that point, giving the other guy his stuff at a penny. So they put this in his other account. Well, the next year, the Union Pacific buys the Northwestern and pays off 100 cents on the buck.
Right.
So that dormant account was the single biggest market maker, money maker in the CBOE floor the next year, the dormant account. So
yeah.
So what you and I would have been forced to sell it at a penny. This guy was so big he didn't have to. And that's what essentially the Japanese banks have done, correct? They took all this stock and they put it.
Well, yeah, that's the premise. But this assumes that at some point that you know that there's 100 cents there.
Well, or that your new business or your ongoing banking business, you're down $20 billion over here, that you can feed these guys $1 billion of profits from the new place over the next 20 years and eventually get yourself whole. That's the other half of the deal. But I'm saying if you're big enough, you get that chance. If you're small enough, we're puking Carl out. He owes us $50,000, and if he declares bankruptcy, we'll just write it off. That's how you and I get treated. But obviously the Japanese Central Bank was going to treat themselves like that.
Well, yeah, and then it's and that's after they come and they take your house, they foreclose on your house,
right? Right. So I mean, but now we have these problems now in Europe, and these. I mean, I you were saying last week. The Fed's got this problem with these repos. Now, I think both of us would agree on two things. One is they've managed to screw the repo market up so bad that people are normally even in the repo market, so there's nobody there to call. That's possibility number one. Or possibility number two is somebody somewhere is in trouble, and the person who needs the money, nobody else will give them the dough because they don't have a good collateral.
Right.
I mean, which have you been able to glean over the last 2 weeks which of those it is?
No, but I would, if I had to take the bet, it would be the latter, because I can't imagine that the repo market has been damaged to the point that it essentially doesn't exist anymore, and that ordinary daily, kinds of things that go on. I mean, that market exists to balance reserves across institutions. You borrow $1 million from bank over here, you go spend it on, expanding your business or whatever, and it's sitting in this other bank until it gets well. Now the reserves between the two banks are out of balance, and that's what the repo market's about at its core. That's its purpose. And,
right.
And the thing that set this off was supposedly the tax deposits. Okay, because those have to go in, and when they go in, they create this dislocation for a short period of time until they clear. Well, okay, fine, except it hasn't gone away, right? I mean, that if that was the case, this would be a non-event 3 days later. But it's not a non-event. It's still going on.
Well, let me ask you this, Carl, just in terms of procedure. I slightly disagree, not disagree, but I'll push back a hair because my small survey, I actually know two people that just happened to watch a game at the local tavern where I will be on occasion. And they were guys who did the repo market. And 5-6 years ago, when the Fed started paying people interest overnight, every bank just shoved their money to the Fed and got interest. And people who actually did the repo market got like laid off. So I don't know if there's people picking up the phone as much as there used to be. There probably still is that capability. But my question to you, technical question, is if, for instance, it's Maddie Weber National Bank that's in trouble, and they need $4 billion overnight. And everybody else says, I don't want to lend to Maddie Weber National Bank. Can the Fed just enter the repo market generally, or do they specifically have to give that loan to Maddie Weber National Bank? And if so, how do they not tell people that?
Well, I mean, Maddie Weber National Bank could go to the discount window. Of course, if you do that, then everybody knows that you're the one that's in trouble. Which is why why the discount window is that, that last resort place is what we saw in 08 was that, you tap that and everyone knows that you've got a problem. And so it's there as a facility that is available for any institution, but it's at a small penalty rate, but nonetheless at a penalty rate. And in addition to that, it doesn't stay quiet once you do it because that's public. That shows up on the New York Fed's website. So it's one of those things that you don't want to do. And the repo market is supposed to be kind of the ordinary lubrication that keeps people from going and hitting the discount window all the time. My problem with this whole premise is that if the Fed is, you know, the Fed has a $1.3 trillion of excess reserves supposedly on deposit, right? So if you come to me and on a repo transaction, you know, you're going to pay me a higher rate than the excess reserve rate for an overnight or a 2 or 3 day or 5 day repo or whatever, I'd be out of my effing mind not to pull those excess reserves, which don't have to be on deposit at the Fed, and let you have them. I'd be crazy not right. to do that, unless I think your collateral's no good. Then all of a sudden, I say, collateral's supposed to be risk-free. If it's not, then I have to add whatever my risk assessment is on that. And if all of a sudden the haircut on that makes the transaction not go, now you got problems.
Well, I guess the question I'm leading to is, in your opinion, which I think is better than mine here, if it is, quote, a bank, let's pull the term Deutsche Bank out, because that's the one that everybody's on the tip of everybody's tongue, that needs like $50 billion tonight, and the Fed directs that to Deutsche Bank out of their excess reserves that people have kicked. In other words, they now are essentially in the federal funds market. They become a competitor, which they have been now for 8 years, because they're the ones that are paying for the excess, right? So how does that stay a secret, that the Fed had a loan, Deutsche Bank, $60 billion last night?
Well, that's a good question, and you know, it's interesting, because you'd think it wouldn't or couldn't, right? But remember back when Lehman got in trouble, there was, when the Veloukis report was published, one of the things that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up in that report was that they went to Citibank to do a tri-party repo, same kind of transaction we're talking about here. They gave Citibank the collateral. Citi looked at it and said, that's garbage, what else do you have? And the answer that Lehman came back with was nothing.
Right.
Okay, so the repo transaction failed. All right, now at that point, Citibank and everybody at their desk knew functionally that Lehman was bankrupt. And so did the Fed, because the Fed is the custodian, and they knew the transaction didn't go. So at that point, you had what, dozens of people all over the street that knew the company was bankrupt? And, gee, magically, all of a sudden, everybody and their brother start shorting their stock. I wonder why.
Yeah,
okay? You know, the put volume went off the charts. And here's the thing. It was several weeks later that the firm actually blew up.
When I come back... Come back, I got an interesting story to that one, Carl. S&P futures up 29, NASDAQ futures 84. We're celebrating Trump saying that the negotiations are going very well. We don't know if he sold his spoos yet. Oh, there's a shot. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jets.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it is time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hauchi. He, Mr. Matt Weber on the board.
The last two times you said stocks and jocks, you said it kind of weird. You're like, stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
There we go. Thank you.
Microphone, you're supposed to give me a new one.
That could be.
Actually, I'm trying to ask you guys a question here before I go to do all the stocks, and I'm trying to figure out how I get you to not go to Google and come up with an answer.
We would never do that.
No, you guys would never do that.
Carl and I are men of integrity.
Yes. Name me the most miserable city in the world, in the U.S. And
oh, so it's a factual question.
Yeah, and which state has more in the top 20? I have to caution you that we're talking about cities here. So,
miserable in what regard?
According to this survey, just plain miserable.
Okay.
But now you can't name like a little place like Posen because that's not a city. That's
sure.
A village. It's got to be a city. All right. S&P futures up 28.25. NASDAQ futures up 83. Let me have another survey up here. And we've got the Dow up 248. Was up over 300 at one point. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 246, 1.1%. Shanghai up 25, that's 0.9%. Hang Seng up 600, 2.3%. That's interesting. I didn't hear much in the way of riots last night, so maybe some progress is being made there. Dex up 244, that's 2%. Wow. FTSE up 53.7. Kekaran up 66, 1.1. So far, the tariffs on Europe have not really had that big of an issue. I mean, I don't know why. We're just not thinking about them. 10-year, 1.70. That's up. Yesterday was 1.58, so that's 12 basis points. That's a huge move. A Bund, same way. Minus 0.45. They were minus 0.58 58. Over in Japan, we've got those guys minus 0.18. So they're not all that far from being even. So we're actually, since all you hear now is this Christine Lagarde is not going to do the same sort of thing that Mario Draghi did. So this Bund has been kind of creeping up a little bit, even though it's still below zero. Oil up 64 cents, 54.19. Brent up 66, 59.76 as a missile allegedly was lung at an Iranian ship in the, it was in the Red Sea, it was near Saudi Arabia. We've got gold down 11 bucks, was down 15, 14.89. Silver down 12 cents, 17.48. Maybe we got forced traffic, whether it's, boy, that was a mouthful this morning, all kinds of stuff going on.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have had a pretty quiet morning as far as traffic is concerned, although we have one issue that's come across the screen in the last few minutes. Lakeshore Drive northbound just before the Oak Street curve, there is a crash that's causing delays. Monroe to Hollywood up to 25 minutes and growing. It's also affecting Gaper traffic on the southbound side of Lakeshore Drive heading into downtown as well. So keep that in mind if you're taking LSD into downtown. But everything else looking good out there. No issues coming in on the Edens. Normal traffic volumes on the Kennedy and Eisenhower. Stevenson looks good. Southside expressways are all quiet. And the suburban tollways have been quiet all morning. So factor in Friday morning, and you get some light traffic out there, which is good news. Weather today, not so good news. After a beautiful week of sunny, mild temperatures, we cool off significantly this afternoon. Rain on and off in the forecast. And we're going to dip from the upper 60s down to the mid-40s by the time you're heading home this evening after work. A high of 66, which is right where we're at right now, or near. We're at 65 right now, but it'll be about 45 around 5 o'clock this afternoon. For our Phoenix listeners, another hot, nice day. Sunshine, high of 90. Right now it's clear and 61. In sports, Blackhawks lost their home opener to the Sharks 5-4 last night. Hawks are 0-2. Coyotes beat the Golden Knights 4-1. Sunday Night Football, it was the Patriots all over the Giants 35-14. And in the Major League Baseball playoffs, the Astros advanced to take on the Yankees in the ALCS after beating the Rays in Game 5. 6-1 was the final last night, with Houston winning that series 3-2. The NLCS begins this evening down in St. Louis. It'll be the Cardinals hosting the Nationals in Game 1 of that best-of-seven series. Chief.
Hawks have a snowball's chance in hell of making the playoffs?
I really don't know. I mean, I have no idea. I haven't read, you know, preseason predictions or power rankings or anything yet, so.
Bulls, no.
Bulls, I think, have a 50-50 shot to sneak into the playoffs because, you know, the young players are getting better. They have some pieces. Otto Porter, the guy they acquired last year, I think is a pretty good player. And the Eastern Conference isn't very good in the bottom half, so I think they could sneak into an 8 or a 7, but what does that really matter?
Not much.
They lose very quickly.
Miserable cities. What do you guys? Now, Kyle's going to know this, but
Well, that's only because I read the article when it came out originally.
See, no, that's cheating.
And then I dug into the data behind it, and I was like, somebody's just trying to get clicks here. Gary, Indiana.
Yep.
And then California though has the most. That one does not surprise.
Well, actually, in the top 20, New Jersey's got 7.
Yeah, New Jersey and Florida's in there too. And the interesting thing is, all of the Florida entries were all in the southern part of the state, south of Orlando, you know, south of like Lake Okeechobee. Okay, but that shouldn't shock either, because you have a lot of areas around Miami that are technically incorporated cities. All right, they're not Miami itself, but they're cities, and they're blank holes. So.
My least favorite cities would be Atlanta is my least favorite city. Detroit.
Really? Least favorite is not the same as miserable.
Well, it's miserable. There's no public transportation. The food is not that great. Traffic is horrendous. And it's really hot and really humid whenever I'm there. Detroit is a miserable city. And
yeah. Detroit's number 3, by the way.
Yeah, I would put that in there. And I'm trying to think. Those would be my first two that come to mind.
What's the matter with Port Arthur, Texas? They're 2.
I've never been there.
What's the story with those guys, girl?
I don't know. I haven't been there either. Detroit's the obvious one. It's interesting. Atlanta, I'm sure, I don't think it made their list at all. And it wouldn't shock me that it didn't, because part of the idea is, lots of crime, which of course, that's going to be true in a lot of major areas. But then the other thing is, not much in the way of economic opportunity. And that was, that's the one that really gets you, right?
Well, look at this for New Jersey. 4 Passaic, 5 Newark, 8 Camden, 11 New Brunswick, 15 Union City, wherever that is, 17 Trenton, and 19 Patterson. This guy's not happy. Whoever wrote this didn't like New Jersey much.
New Jersey is a blank hole and has been for a long time. I mean, Newark, come on.
Yeah.
What were the factors that went into the rating?
It's got to be crime and income, I would think. Carl, you read all that.
Yeah, crime and it's basically, garbage for job opportunities, and then addiction rates and those places that got smashed in terms of housing. Detroit makes it primarily because there's huge swaths of the city that literally have no services anymore, because you ended up with, no houses that are occupied in a block, so the city can bow down and turn the water and power off.
Yeah, you wonder how there's places like that in Chicago, Carl, where there's 3-4 houses left on a block. You wonder you're just keeping the streetlights up and everything else has got to be somewhat of a, I mean, your tax, three people can't be paying for that if they're paying at all. I mean, it does become, I mean, you wonder if you almost wouldn't let the suburbs that surround the place all just like annex a mile or two in and just shrink it.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know if they're still doing it, but in Detroit for quite a while after the housing crash, there was a period of time where the city would sell you one of these places for a dollar.
And
the whole point was the person who owned it wasn't paying any taxes. They had abandoned it. It was, you know, it was still standing. It was a house, but it was, you know, there was nothing there. And they were attempting to get people to come back in there and, of course, you know, put them back on the tax roll so they could collect some money.
Well,
one of our listeners says you got to put Houston on that list too, and he says I agree on Atlanta. I've never really spent much time in Houston, so I don't know.
I haven't either, but I've spent an awful lot of time in Atlanta, although not in the last 10 years or so. But when I lived in Chicago before I set up MCS, I did an awful lot of back and forth between Atlanta and Chicago. It was you know, twice a week sometimes.
But you and the listener,
Atlanta is just, I mean, it's not LA traffic, but it's getting there without the beautiful weather and the great restaurants and the beach and stuff to do. I mean, Atlanta to me is just like one giant Naperville of hell. I mean, I hate it.
Yeah, but you're like,
well, and then the other thing too is that, you know, years ago, once you got north of Jimmy Carter, it was pretty open. North of Norcross, there was nothing, a farmer's field. Now you go all the way to Helen, and it's all built up.
Yeah, yeah, it's huge.
Well, Matt, you're giving us like the I love when I can accuse you of this. You're giving us like the one percenter view. If I go there on a business trip and stay in a nice hotel, which city sucks? You're not going to Gary and stay at a nice hotel. You're not even getting there.
No question about it. I mean, obviously, I've driven through Gary many times, like we all have in Chicago. And to me, that's not even a city. I mean, that's just like a factory in like six blocks.
Well, there is a city that goes quite a bit south, but then,
yeah.
Anyway, Carl, let's kind of get back to, you know, I want to get your feel on one thing because I actually have I'm doing this selfishly. A lot of clients that have this Apple stock. I've asked everybody this week. I have no clue as to what kind of deal these guys think they have with China and the Trumpino regarding being held harmless by all this stuff, where if you name me one company that's in the crosshairs of these two countries, it's got to be this stock. And I don't get why they go up every single day without anybody seeing any risk there but me.
I think there's, well, this is so far, I have to give Apple and Cook, I have to give them some credit. They've managed to dodge the meteor, so to speak, thus far. But I just don't see how you get there from here over the longer term, because, and it's not so much the tariff situation, it's the fact that China has an extraordinarily repressive society and demands, you know, fealty and control of everything. You look at what just happened with the NBA.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing, you know, and Apple, you know, kowtowed to them and took an app down that the protesters in Hong Kong were using to figure out where the cops were. And said, oh, well, we'll go along with that. And you know, you can make an argument for it because, you know, they say, well, you know, it's facilitating violence. Okay. All right. Fine. But at what point does this run into the same general problem that you have with all of these corporations in some ways? I mean, I did an article about this, the U.S. side of this, not with Apple specifically, but with Facebook. Facebook is allowing the FBI to run ads for people to spy on Russia. Well, last time I checked, spying's illegal in the country that you're targeting, right?
Right.
It always has been. And frequently, if you get caught spying for some country and you're over there, they'll hang you. So that's nothing new, right? But of course, spying's been going on forever. But I thought you weren't allowed to do inauthentic things on their platform.
It depends on who they're inauthentic for, evidently.
Well, apparently, yeah. But see, this is that's the U.S. example. Now transplant that into the Chinese environment with their social credit scores and their monitoring requirements, everything else, and then tell me how Apple survives this as a services firm, not so much just an iPhone seller, but as a services firm over time, and doesn't get banged by it at some point. I, I, you know, so far they've dodged it, but I don't know. I think there's a lot of risk there.
What, I mean, I watch these financial news things all day long for my clients so they don't have to. That's why they pay me. I don't think I've ever seen, you know, five talking heads, six talking heads at a table so conflicted and on a subject as this Chinese situation with the NBA. I mean, there's going to be somebody who just, you know, he's the guy who just got out of the business school looking for a promotion, I guess. You've got to do, I mean, your job is to make money for your firm, and, you know, if you're dealing over there and that's where the money is, you just got to, you know, kowtow to these guys. And somebody else is like, wait a minute. I mean, the idea that the NBA now, I don't know if this is true, Matty probably does, is now if you go to an NBA game and you flip up a poster that says, you know, free Hong Kong, they're going to boot you out of the stadium.
Well, they did.
Yeah, well, they did. I mean, I don't, now, these guys wanting to make money in China supersede a right we have here? I mean, this idea of doing business with crummy people, not people, crummy government, I mean, when does that supersede the rights of people? I mean, if the money's enough, it's like the old story, well, you know, will you have sex with me for $1 million? Well, sure. What about $2? What do you think, I am a whore? Well, we've already established that. Now we're just negotiating price. You know, I mean, what's the price here? I mean, that we decide that Joe Kennedy obviously had his price. He was willing
to
spend.
Think about this though. This is not a new issue. Okay, all of a sudden this NBA thing brings it into focus for the average Joe.
Right.
But when you look at what's going on with, you know, American, you know, companies, I mean, what is the essence of the Chinese miracle in its relationship to America? We took the environmental destruction that was served upon Americans, which we decided we weren't willing to put up with anymore, and we shoved it over there. And then we took the slave labor that we decided we weren't willing to put up with, and we shoved it over there.
Right.
And we hid all of that, and the instant blowback that would come in your currency and your trade deficit by allowing them to have something that no other nation with a supposed open trade system has, which is a dual currency system, so they can essentially roach motel the funds and prevent the collapse of the renminbi, which otherwise would happen. Now, right. If they were forced into having free exchangeability like the euro has, like the pound has, like the Swiss franc has, like whatever, their currency would be trading at a quarter of what it is today.
Well, but they also, they pegged their currency to the dollar, so the extent the thing was screwed up
but they didn't. Only the external currency is pegged, and the only way you can exchange between those two is through the PBOC.
Right.
If you're Nike and you decide you don't want your plant over there anymore, guess what? That $1 billion, you can't get it out of the country.
No. Well, so what happens, and then you've got this dollar-denominated and euro-denominated investments out of China that I don't think the government cares at all about, which is one of my big risk factors worldwide right now, which you never hear anything about either.
Yeah. Well, this is one of those things. Everybody, as you said, you know, all we are now, we're negotiating price. We've already figured out that you're a whore.
Yeah.
And yet, all of a sudden, when this happens with the NBA, it gets brought into focus for the average guy. The fact that Apple has essentially, you know, how many billions of dollars do they make every quarter because they have what amounts to a slave labor factory and an environmental dumping ground in China with their assembly plants and their ability to source things there. If they had to build them here, it would, it would cost an extra $10 a phone. Well, excuse me, okay, you know, when I was growing up, you couldn't eat the fish out of the local river. You didn't want to swim in it. There was mercury all over the thing. The thing looked like blankety blank constantly, and your eyes were watering from the chemical plant down the road. Now, that same place, I can see all the way to the bottom of the river. It's beautiful.
Yep.
The fish are fine, and the air pollution's gone. Well, where did it all go? Do you think we stopped doing it? No. We shoved it over there.
Well, and also, the thing that economically is the screw-up is back, I mean, you look at the union movement here, and again, unions, you know, what happened to the unions, they got as bureaucratic as the people they were dealing with, but, in a lot of ways. But the Pinkertons were essentially hired to beat up on union organizers, correct? Which is what, in China, I honestly believe, and I'm not going to sell it to Tim Cook's face if he was on the show, although I would probably hint at it. That's the kind of guy I am. They have, I'm going to use the term, paid off government officials to keep their fingers essentially on the neck of the population. Because a lot of these sons of agricultural secretaries, son of this guy, daughter of that guy, the reason why there's millionaires in China is because they're getting money from somewhere. It's obviously not going to the rank and file, I'll use the term. It's being intercepted along the way. The government is, but China is somewhat of a unique situation, Carl. I don't know if you agree with me, but there's places in the world. I mean, you can't go to, well, you can so far. Hopefully someday you will. You can't go to Africa or even South America in some areas and decide to have a democratic society. There's no idea of the loyal opposition. There's no idea of leaving office when you lose. I mean, it's not part of the pulse of the people yet. Hopefully someday it will be. Well, in Russia, it's very hard to have a market economy because they sort of never had one. I mean, the people don't necessarily, not that they can't learn, they sure can. But China has always been an amazingly competitive economy underneath whatever loser, be it the king or wherever the hell they were for a zillion years. They've always been a market economy beneath some sort of a dictatorial so it's easy to open up, let's say, the will of the people there who are anxious to do business in the marketplace down the block. It's in the blood. It's not like you have to teach a Chinese dude how to be competitive or out of a market economy. And yet the government has done a remarkable job for them, not for you or me or for morality, of managing to stay on top of that and not have the growth in the democratic, commerce process impact the non-democratic government process. And that's where Milton Friedman was totally wrong. He thought one would always overtake the other, and obviously it hasn't, somehow.
Well, where Friedman was wrong was he didn't think that anybody could get away with the kind of dual currency system that the Chinese have and actually maintain it, not have it blow up in their face. And so far they have.
Right.
If you want to look at the Friedmans of the world and say, you know, where'd they get it wrong? Why didn't it work out that way? That's the answer. Because if to some extent, the WTO and the UN and all these other so-called multinational organizations that are supposed to enforce some sense of equity across borders, okay, some sense of equality, have just totally, you know, oh no, we're not going to do that because it's China. Well, if they had done it, then, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, this nonsense wouldn't be going on because you couldn't be building cities when nobody's living in them and running a 400% debt-to-GDP ratio and not have it whack the living snot out of your currency.
Right. Well, I mean, maybe everything in life, I guess, is timing, Carl. I mean, our revolution was at a time where essentially a farmer with a flintlock, if he's smart enough to get behind a bush or a tree, really was the equivalent of a regular British Army guy. I mean, right?
Yep.
I mean, George Washington, if you look at some studies that I've read about British, of course, British managed to fight everybody in the world for how long? They have number one general they've ever fought against is George Washington. Because he, you know, they're like, where did this guy come from? You know, guerrilla warfare, this, that, knew how to organize an army. He was special. They didn't come across anything like that anywhere. They had like a regular army that could also be almost a guerrilla army. I mean, there was also
another element of this that a lot of people don't, that haven't like done any real study of it, don't understand, and that is that the muskets and rifles that the colonists had were considerably more accurate at a given distance than the British regulars.
Well, we had
and
France
so
on our side.
We could pick people off at about double the range that they could on an effective basis, and that makes a huge difference.
Oh God. Well, but my point being is, where people now say, well, the people in Iran, you know, they need to rise up against these guys. Well, yeah, you probably do, but these guys got machine guns and tanks and everything and concentration camps, and the fight is not near as fair, let's put it, as it was.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, and I don't know how the people of China would ever, those guys don't care if they knock off 500,000 people. I mean, this group hasn't shown that yet, but I mean, Mao sure didn't. Chiang Kai-shek didn't. I mean, I mean, they don't care how many people they lose along the way. So, I mean, I don't know what happens there, but I mean, clearly this trade negotiation has become way more than just trade negotiation. It has to do with maybe we should drop back for a while. There's a guy on CNBC saying, we're not going to change their economic system. Why don't we just, look, you need to buy stuff from us. We need to buy stuff from you. Let's just leave it there. And maybe that's what we should. I mean, you don't steal our stuff. I mean, I don't know where to go. They ripped the scab off this thing, and I don't see a solution. Now, a solution today everybody's cheering the hell out of is some sort of a very skinny deal where you essentially stop fighting and raising tariffs. It has nothing to do with a deal that I read, do you?
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. And you know, that's one of the things that kind of gets me about this whole, you know, so-called skinny deal is it really isn't one. But you need at some point, there is a balancing that has to take place between what's gone on for the last 20 years and what we need to do now.
Right.
Okay, and nobody wants to do that on either side. We don't want to do it because again, Apple really likes the idea of you know, people making 50 cents a day over there assembling their phones, right? I mean, let's not kid ourselves. And on the other hand, and by the way, Nike loves the idea of 14-year-olds making sneakers
and 14-year-old
labor
and 14-year-old here is buying them for $150.
Yeah, and the thing is that, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, we can't be competitive, we can't do that because, you know, we do da 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 da. Oh, that's such a load of bull. Come on,
yeah.
You're telling me that if you had to actually pay people some kind of, you know, something that approached a market rate, that there was no way that you could make these numbers work. That is just a load of nonsense. Oh, your stock price might go down $5.
Right. All right, Kyle, we got a dash, buddy. SP Futures, thank you very much. Terrific as usual. SP Futures up 27.50. NASDAQ Futures up 78. Be back on Monday. Stocks and Jocks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.